I had two sermon titles today. One was Jesus in the Eye of the Storm, but later on I thought, I like this better, Rocking the Boat. But anyway, you choose whichever you like. Long ago, as a child, the late President Theodore Roosevelt was called Teddy. That was his nickname, Teddy. Why it was Teddy and not Teddy, I will never know, because most people don't know this, but teddy bears were actually named after Theodore Roosevelt. Teddy bears. His mother, Mittie, what is with the names in that family? But anyway, his mother, Mittie, had discovered at one point that Teddy was so afraid of Madison Square Church, where they went every week to worship, that he refused to set foot inside the church if he was alone. So she pressed him to tell her, why are you so afraid of going into the church? I mean, he was terrified. She discovered that there was something called the zeal that scared him. He claimed that he had heard the minister read about the zeal from the Bible, and ever since he was afraid to go into the church alone. Well, his mother Mittie pulled out her concordance and went through every passage in the Bible that contained the word zeal, until suddenly, very excitedly, he told her to stop. And the line was from John 2:17. This is the King James Version, by the way, in the passage about Jesus when he cleared the temple. This is what it reads there. And his disciples remembered that it is written, the zeal of thine house hath eaten me up. Now you know why the kid was scared. The zeal might eat him up, right? You can understand, though, how a little child hearing that in church would misunderstand that kind of a phrase. And often it seems that those things that we fear the most in life arise out of our lack of understanding. We do not understand our neighbors from another country or a different religion, and we fear them. We see young people in our community going around with piercings or multicolored hair or unusual clothing or extensive tattoos, and we fear them. We hear of a new disease in a foreign land, all I have to say is COVID, and we fear that it will make its way here. Fear can be rational, yes it can, but it can also be irrational. But either way, fear cripples us. I remember a scene, and it's in the Charlie Brown's Christmas special, if you ever want to see it. And Charlie Brown is trying to cope with the malaise that he's feeling during that season. And he comes to Lucy, who's at her psychiatrist booth. Remember that? And he drops a nickel in her can, and he unloads her heart about how he's feeling. Lucy thinks for a second and then suggests that, well, maybe Charlie is suffering from fear. And she begins to list all kinds of different kinds of fears, like agoraphobia, which is a fear of open spaces, or claustrophobia, which is a fear of enclosed places. And each one, Charlie Brown just kind of shakes his head no, and he says, no, that's not it. And then Lucy says, well, maybe you suffer from panphobia. And Charlie says, what's that? And Lucy replies, it's the fear of everything. And Charlie yells out loud enough to knock Lucy right off her seat, that's it! You know, fear, though, can be a good thing, as God gave us that feeling to protect us from predators and danger. But now in our modern world, it's becoming a problem. It really is. It steals vitality and our strength. It keeps us from going out and trying new things. It keeps us from discovering our full potential. Fear is closely related, of course, to anxiety. And one of the best definitions of anxiety I've ever heard is that worry is paying interest on a debt you have yet to incur. Now, as someone, I admit this freely, who struggles daily with anxiety, I can tell you honestly that it can wreak havoc on your mental health. It can dampen your mood at any time and in any situation. So those of us who struggle with anxiety, we often play this little mental game with ourselves. We imagine that we're going to an upcoming event or there's going to be something happening in our lives, and we picture in our mind the very worst thing that can happen, and we play it over and over and over again, so much so that it might keep us up at night. And when we go to the event or the situation occurs and everything works out better than we imagined, we tell ourselves that we're coping well. However, we're not coping well at all. We are simply playing a game of self-delusion. We are manipulating our feelings to cope with our anxiety. Now, our gospel lesson today is one that, well, might be quite familiar to you. The story opens with Jesus teaching the crowd that has been following him for some time. And as was so apt to happen with him, the crowd had begun to push in on him physically. The crowd was becoming oppressive, but Jesus knew that they were sheep without a shepherd. And to compensate for this pressure of the crowd and to give himself some room to breathe, he stepped into a boat and set a bit off from the shore to give himself some distance, some space, so he could teach and heal continually. All day, he had been teaching and healing from that boat. But as we saw a couple weeks ago, he was apt to, in the midst of all this teaching and healing, to forego food and to give up on rest and to just keep going. Well, Jesus' human nature eventually caught up with him. He was exhausted. And so he asked the disciples to hoist anchor and set sail for the other side of the Sea of Galilee. Thus the crowd was left behind on the shore of the Sea of Galilee, but Mark tells us that there were people in other boats who followed them. The little fishing boat had hardly set out when Jesus, who'd been absolutely exhausted by the day, goes and lays down in the stern of the boat. He drifts off to sleep on a cushion that was there. Now, perhaps you'd like to know a little bit more about the Sea of Galilee. Maybe you don't, I don't know. The Sea of Galilee is actually a freshwater lake. It's not actually a sea, but it's the largest freshwater lake in all of Israel. The lake is 21 kilometers long. It is 13 kilometers wide, making it a total of 166.7 square kilometers. There's your Trivial Pursuit answer right there. The Sea of Galilee is actually quite small compared to a lot of our Canadian lakes. Very small. What is most interesting about this lake is that it's 209 to 215 feet below sea level. It is therefore the lowest freshwater lake in all of the world. The Dead Sea is the only one that's lower, but it's not a freshwater lake. I wouldn't recommend drinking there. Because of its depth below sea level and because it is surrounded by hills, the Sea of Galilee is prone to very sudden and very violent storms. Air pressure drives storm fronts down into the lake, and the heat and the moisture from the lake energizes the storms. Now, the storms may not last long, but they are very, very intense. So in our gospel lesson, Jesus and the disciples, and remember there are other boats too, encounter one of these terrifying storms while they're out in the lake. Suddenly, the wind picks up. The rain rushes in, and the waves rose to the point that that little boat began to take on water. Remember, these are simple little wooden boats with simple sails and wooden rudders, and there were at least 13 men on the boat that Jesus was on, some of whom were seasoned fishermen, and even they were scared out of their minds. Peter, James, and John, experienced on this lake, would have jumped immediately into action. They would have dropped the sail. They would have kept the boat steered properly into the waves, into the storm, organizing the others to bail. And bail, bail, bail they did. At some point into the storm, we don't know how long it took, one of the disciples, and we don't know who, must have realized that Jesus was sleeping through the tempest. He was fast asleep. When that realization was shared with the rest of the disciples, I am sure that somebody in Aramaic, which was their native tongue, said, "You've got to be kidding. How in the world can he sleep through this?" At first thought, you would explain that, well, Jesus is just horribly exhausted. He's fatigued. In our modern colloquial language, we have expressions that talk about that. He said, "I was so tired, I could have slept through an explosion." Or, "A team of wild horses couldn't have woken me." Or, "He was dead to the world." The disciples find themselves trying to keep that boat afloat, and they are beside themselves with fear, and then they get angry at Jesus because he's sleeping. Doesn't he care that we are about to perish, him included? The Bible says they, meaning all of them as a group, frantically woke him up. With the winds howling and Jesus a bit groggy, they shout at him, "Teacher, don't you even care that we're going to drown?" When Jesus kind of finally shakes his head free of the cobwebs, he shouts to the storm, "Quiet down." And guess what? The storm stops. As suddenly as the storm came, it was gone. And there was a great calm. Have you ever had one of those moments when you're on a lake or near a lake and there's no wind and the lake gets like glass? I love those moments. I really do, because on evenings on those occasions, you can see the fish come up and grab the bugs off the top of the water. They don't grab my lure, but they grab the bugs off the water. That's how the Sea of Galilee looked after Jesus calmed it, just like glass. Understandably, the disciples seeing this and experiencing this are in awe of Jesus. Who is this man that even the wind and the waves obey him? Remember, these are seasoned fishermen, at least some of them. They know this lake intimately. From a young age, they've sailed it with their fathers. They've heard all the stories passed down about that lake, including stories of people who perished in such storms like that. But never had they ever seen or heard of someone who could stand up and control the weather. That's something brand new. Who is this Jesus who can command the weather? Clearly, this passage demonstrates Jesus' divinity as one of the points of this story. However, the other major point here is the one I want to focus on, and maybe of more immediate relevance to us in our day-to-day lives, frankly. What is the very first thing that Jesus says to the disciples after he calms the storm? If you think about it for just a second, he had lots of options here of things to say. Jesus could have said to them, "Gee, fellas, sorry about that. I mean, sleeping and all. I was just a bit tired." He could have said that. "You know what my day's been like. You can understand." He also could have said something like, "Ta-da! What do you think of that trick? Look what I can do." He didn't say anything like that. Not at all. What does he say? He asks a question. "Why are you so afraid?" To be frank, to me it's an odd question. It really is. Why are we afraid? Did you see the storm? Poor Matthew is aching from bailing, and Peter's hands are raw from holding the tiller so tight. We were going to drown. How else should we feel in such a predicament? I'm sure the disciples stood there looking at Jesus with confused faces. Why are we afraid? Why aren't you? Likely reading their hearts, Jesus then asks a second question. Do you still not have faith in me? His question carries some frustration in it, but also a sense of chastisement. The disciples have been following Jesus now for a little while. They've seen the miracles so far. They've heard his teaching. And Mark adds in verses 33 to 34 the extra benefit of being a disciple that likely is closely connected to this passage. Mark writes, "He used many stories and illustrations to teach the people as much as they were able to understand. In fact, in the public teaching, he taught only with parables, but afterwards, when he was alone with his disciples, he explained the meaning to them." So they got more. The disciples had every advantage of knowing and following Jesus. Every advantage. They had seen what he could do. They had heard about the nature of God's kingdom. Even with all of this, they were still afraid. I get it. I really do. I understand them. We experience life the same way. Today, we have every advantage of Jesus teaching through the scriptures and through sermons and Bible studies and videos and all that stuff. We have resources beyond measure before us. We claim a closeness to Jesus in our prayers and in our praise. We relish in words like Jesus is mighty to save. Blessed assurance, we like to sing, and so many, many more. Unlike the disciples who have been with Jesus by the time of the storm only a few months, some of us, we claim to have known Jesus for years, decades even. So what happens to you when you receive troubling news? Doctor comes into his office with you and delivers an unpleasant diagnosis. What happens to you? You realize one night sitting at the kitchen table, you just can't make your mortgage payment. What happens to you? Your kid is drifting into a lifestyle that you know is dangerous and will lead to nothing but trouble. Or the company we work for is laying off people or is closing outright. Or my marriage is in trouble and shall I go on? Any one of these situations and hundreds more like them trigger our anxiety and our fear. So during those sleepless nights, Jesus comes to us and says, "Why are you afraid?" And our immediate response is one of anger, I think. What do you mean, why am I afraid? Just look at my situation, how bad it is. My life is spiraling out of control. My boat is taking on water, and no amount of bailing seems to keep it afloat. Furthermore, my desperate, my urgent pleas to you, Jesus, have found you asleep, I think, in the back of the boat while the tempest rages. Don't you care, Jesus? That's the heart of it, isn't it? Deep down in a dark corner of our hearts, we wonder in the midst of our troubles, does God really care? We even go so far as to question God's goodness when the storms of life come upon us. I think that what we doubt in our lives is not Jesus' words. No. We don't doubt the stories of Jesus. I don't think any of that's the problem. I think what we doubt is Jesus is even aware of us. That Jesus is a part of my life. So when we have this doubt, when we fear we are alone at the mercy of the universe. And it keeps us up at night. The greatest gift Jesus offers us is maybe that we don't need to live like this. We don't need to live full of anxiety and fear. We need this story of the boat in the storm to remind us that the problem with fear is our problem. Jesus has given us a way out. Amid the tempest, guess what? Jesus is still there. Jesus is there in the midst of the tempest. He's peaceful. He's full of assurance. He's not worried one bit at all. Andrew Jackson, who was to become the president of the United States, won fame as a general in the Battle of New Orleans, in the last great battle of the War of 1812. The famous battle was fought, actually, when the war was officially over. Most people don't know that. The peace treaty between the Americans and the British was signed on December the 24th, 1814, but news traveled so slowly in those days that neither the British troops in the South nor General Jackson knew that the treaty had been signed. So they went to battle. So in the early part of 1815, a deadly battle was fought, and it was won by General Jackson's army. If only he had known that the war was already over, the peace was declared, all that suffering, all that death could have been avoided. You see, it doesn't matter what battles and struggles you face and I face in life. It doesn't matter. The battle's already won. It's done. Victory is assured. If God is for us, who can be against us? Right? But where's our confidence in Christ? Why do we still get angry and shout at him, "Don't you care?" Have we not been listening to his words? Have we not been paying attention to his miracles? Are we no better than the people of Jesus' day who he described as an adulterous and faithless generation? We know we shouldn't fret. We know we shouldn't worry. But boy, it's hard not to. I get it. We want to trust Jesus, but we feel more confident in trusting ourselves, right? I wonder sometimes what would have happened if Jesus' disciples hadn't woken him up. I really don't know, but I suspect that the plans of God would not have been thwarted. The plans for Jesus to go to Calvary would have continued on. If the storm had truly been life-threatening, Jesus would have got up on his own, I think, and calmed the storm. The plans for your life that God has prepared from the foundations of the world will not be thwarted. No matter what happens, we are in God's hands. The Apostle Paul calls us to a higher way of living when he writes this in Philippians 4. Don't worry about anything. Instead, pray about everything. Tell God what you need and thank him for all that he has done. If you do this, you will experience God's peace, which is far more wonderful than the human mind can understand. His peace will guard your hearts and your minds as you live in Christ Jesus. Frankly, isn't that what we want? Peace? A peace that passes all understanding. Then why are you afraid? He's already given you his peace. So now I charge you, I urge you to live in confidence by what you already possess.